The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Kohan and Friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Sam Harris, one of the few people who survived the Holocaust as a young child, and the man behind the creation of the new Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center. We'll also have a visit from Israel correspondent Rabbi David Wilfond from Jerusalem, storyteller Jordan Hill, and our expert on the international scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com. Or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's the sixth day of Passover today. We are in the latter stages of the long festival of freedom and matzah. There are many ritual observances for the holiday of Pesach. The seders we held on the first two nights were, of course, entirely ritualized meals. But all of the matzah and maror, the four cups of wine and the salt water and charoset and roasted egg, the afikomen, the cup of Elijah, all the special songs and prayers and rites and games were designed not for a ritual purpose, but to teach us the meaning and real purpose of freedom. Freedom's a word we throw around a lot in America, mostly on the right side of the political spectrum. This is, after all, the land of the free, as our national anthem would have it. In fact, I recall that my high school U.S. history textbook was called The Land of the Free. Well, whether it's always true or not, we place a very high value indeed on freedom. But as we Jews have known for more than 3,000 years, freedom is actually a pretty complex concept. So on Passover, the Zman Chirutenu, the season of our freedom, it's entirely appropriate to ask, just what does it really mean to be free? The answer is that it means different things at different times in our lives. When I teach Pesach to small children, I have them hold their hands together tightly and try to pull them apart, and then see what it's like not to let their hands go. The message for little kids is that freedom is just the absence of constriction or coercion. When children become older, they come to understand freedom as having increased privileges, the freedom to stay up late, to choose which sports or hobbies to pursue, to see friends and spend time with them. When kids reach adolescence, they see freedom as having more latitude in what they eat or how they dress, or being able to stay out longer and later. As they mature towards adulthood, those privileges extend to the ability to drive a car, real freedom of movement, and eventually the freedom to choose what to study, where to live, what profession to enter. As adults, our feelings about freedom are shaped by these developmental stages. Throughout our lives, we tend to see freedom as a kind of series of evolving privileges that enlarge our scope of action and our ability to move freely in the world and to do what we wish to do when we wish to do it. By that standard, we are perhaps most free when we are young adults. Not necessarily the happiest, but the most free. For shortly thereafter, as full-fledged adults, we begin to add responsibilities. Spouses, career and community requirements, homes, pets, and of course the greatest of responsibilities, children. In Jewish terms, however, it is in that context that we can most completely come to understand what freedom is and what it truly means.
Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing. I mean nothing, hon, if it ain't free.
Because for us, freedom is not, as Kris Kristofferson wrote in Janis Joplin's saying, nothing left to lose. It's not just the absence of constraint or the privilege of choosing what we're going to wear or eat or how long to grow our hair or even the freedom to decide where we're going to be doing whatever it is we are going to choose to do. No, freedom is not the ability to avoid paying taxes or to prevent somebody from setting foot on your precious property without your express permission. Freedom, Grown-up freedom, real adult freedom, is having the flexibility to choose what and whom you will serve. It's the ability to choose your own master, to decide for yourself what responsibilities you will dedicate your life to trying to fulfill. The great lesson of Passover is that freedom brings with it great personal responsibility, to use that freedom not solely for our own selfish desires, but to share and perfect and try even to redeem the world. In a word, we are free precisely so that we can choose to try to make this world a better place. Poet Ruth Brin puts it beautifully. Are we free as the birds? Yes, and more free. For birds fly by the charts of instinct and make no choice in the pattern of their existence. But we are not winged creatures. We are human beings. Freedom to choose is our definition. An ability to choose well is our portion of the divine. Gratefully we thank you, God, who is the source of our freedom. Let us make each free choice with wisdom. Let us choose blessing and peace. President Franklin Roosevelt put it memorably in his State of the Union address 69 years ago, back in 1941, on the eve of World War II for us. He defined the four essential freedoms that our world needs. The first is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world. The second is freedom of every person to worship God in his own way, everywhere in the world. The third is freedom from want. Translated into world terms, means economic understandings which will secure to every nation a healthy peacetime life for its inhabitants, everywhere in the world. And the fourth, as President Roosevelt said, is freedom from fear, which, translated into world terms, means a worldwide reduction of armaments to such a point and in such a thorough fashion that no nation will be in a position to commit an act of physical aggression against any neighbor, anywhere in the world. You know, these four freedoms of Roosevelt's resonate today on this Festival of Freedom, this Pesach, although we know that for much of the world, even these four remain a distant dream. On Passover, may we rejoice in our personal freedom of religion, and may we commit ourselves to a grown-up vision of freedom that compels us to work to assure that all people can experience these freedoms here at home and everywhere in the world. To play us in this spring morning on this great Festival of Freedom, from our treasure house of Pesach music, the Jews of Morocco and the great Sephardic musical group The Voice of the Turtle hears a beautiful song, Moshe Saliu de Mitzrayim, Moses Leaving Egypt.
Moses Saliu de Mitzrayim, derecho Midian encontró se con Yitro. Dio le así por la su hija porque era temiente de Dios. Se pasaba el ganado de su suegro le entregó. Y al pasando su ganado al monte de Jorge, asentóse en una piedra, esperando ver a Dios. Oí una voz que decía,
That was from the Spanish Jews of Morocco. Moses leaves Egypt for the festival of Pesach. You know, one last thought about freedom and Passover. As my mother, Claire Cohan, noted, what kind of holiday teaches the value of freedom by forcing us to work like slaves, cleaning and cooking and preparing for weeks? After all, preparations for the festival of Passover are by far the most demanding of all Jewish holidays, a seemingly endless round of cleansing our homes of chametz, leavening, of changing dishes, of washing and chopping and grinding and cooking and serving, and then the endless process of cleaning up, eventually changing everything back all over again. What could possibly be about freedom on a holiday that entails so much slave-like work? The answer, of course, is that Passover is designed to remind us of what it means to be a slave, so that we value our freedom. Perhaps only by all this schlepping and endless work can we really come to appreciate our freedom the rest of the year. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish knows all about both slavery and freedom. His name is Sam Harris. He was perhaps the youngest person to survive the Holocaust in concentration camps. His story is astonishing. It led him to a great recent accomplishment. Meet Sam Harris. Hear his remarkable story in a few moments, right here on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace. But sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114. Mimuna is the most unusual and fun Jewish event in Tucson. Great music, dance, delicious food, and fun in a fabulous, unusual way. Tuesday night, April 6th at 7 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel's, join in a fabulous Mimuna Moroccan Festival as we conclude Passover with great music and terrific treats from the Jewish tradition of Morocco. We'll sing traditional Moroccan melodies and dance up a storm as we end the Festival of Matzah with lots of non-Passover treats. Join Rabbi Sam Cohen and classical guitarist Steve Shulman for a spectacular program of exciting Sephardic music and performance, all accompanied by a marvelous meal of delicious and unique Mimuna sweets and treats. It's a great night of wonderful music, food, drink, and supple dancing, co-sponsored by the Israel Center and Temple Emmanuel. Tickets for the Mimuna Festival are just $10 in advance for Temple and JCC members, $12 for general admission, and $15 at the door. Students with an ID card are just $5, and all children under the age of 13 attend free. All food and drink is included. Call 327-4501 to get your tickets now for the Mimuna Festival and Concert, Thursday, April 6th at 7 p.m. with the Israel Center at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road.
We're delighted to welcome to Too Jewish this morning our guest, Sam Harris. Sam is a Holocaust survivor, if not the youngest, one of the very youngest to have been in the camps and survived. He's been a resident of the Chicago area for many years and is really the, well, I don't want to say the founding force, but a critical mover in creating the new Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center in Skokie. And I'm going to ask him to talk a little bit about that process. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning.
So Skokie is famous, and you know, those of us who are not completely young Jews, as the site of that infamous march by neo-Nazis that was supported by the court, and then in response they built a kind of a small Holocaust center as sort of a education process. It was an older Jewish area, but really there wasn't much of a Holocaust memorial in the Chicago area.
There wasn't much, but it was a good beginning, because when the Nazis marched in the late 70s there, the neo-Nazis, the Jews were confronted with, hey, wait a minute, we got these are survivors. There were about 70,000 people, and 40,000 were Jews in that town, and 7,000 were Holocaust survivors. They just happened to be there, and these Nazis picked this place. And just can't imagine with seeing Nazi paraphernalia and Hitler. It was a terrible thing. It was very, very, very emotional. And of course, went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that they were allowed to march. So as a result of all of this, the Jews decided to get together and not fight with guns, but with education. And they created... We created this speakers bureau. We went to Springfield, where the capital is, and we asked them to pass a law that all the schools must study the Holocaust. And subsequently, we went back just a few years ago, and we asked that we not only study the Holocaust but other genocides. If you look around. My gosh, all the Darfur and just...
Armenian genocide.
Yeah, all over. So the students in Illinois are studying this. Now, the good news is there's about 18 states now that have adopted this philosophy and have passed similar laws. And what's exciting to me, like I just called the museum this morning, the first thing they said, you should see the number of buses that are here. And, you know, we have like 350 buses lined up already for the year. And the thrill that I get is watching those students go through with the teachers and with the wonderful docents, all these people that volunteer their time to study the Holocaust and take these students through. Because we believe that education, the future, that's where it's at. That's the only way we can make sure that my children don't have to go through what I went through. If there was a better way, Rabbi Cohen, I would do it. But I think education, and this is why we call it the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center.
We will continue this discussion with Sam Harris talking about this remarkable education center and museum in Illinois, as well as his own personal experiences when we come back on Too Jewish.
Choosing the proper care for your mother, father, or other loved one isn't easy. David Shackman and his wife Ann are New Yorkers who recently found a home at Handmaker, Tucson's premier provider of assisted living and senior care.
I'm 88 years old, my wife is 86, and we like staying at Handmaker because people here are very courteous and the atmosphere is nice.
Well, I like the program here because they have entertainers, have a bingo, they made a luau with Hawaiian dances.
Handmaker gives their son, Ken, peace of mind.
I know that they are going to get good service and the staff will treat them as friends.
Handmaker, centrally located on Rosemont just south of Grant, includes one and two bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, and Tucson's most caring staff. Call 881-2323.
The food here is excellent. It's as good as any good restaurant in New York City.
For a consultation and tour, call 881-2323 or go to handmaker.org.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading us there at the Apple iTunes Store as popular Jewish podcasts. You know, there are some odd Passover stories every year. There seems to be something about Pesach that brings out the weirdness in the Jewish world. This year, perhaps the strangest one had to do with a brewery in New York that has produced, I am not making this up, kosher for Passover beer. Let me explain. Since all leavened products that are made from grain or use yeast to develop fermentation are forbidden on Pesach, this makes beer an almost spectacularly not kosher for Passover product. After all, beer is made from wheat and barley and fermented with yeast. What could be more chametz-oriented than that? Ah, but the Ramapo Valley Brewery in Hilburn, New York, has brewed a concoction called honey beer, a Passover honey lager made from gluten-free ingredients, which also happen to be wheat and barley-free, and fermented without yeast. It's made from honey and molasses and hops. It sounds, well, dreadful, but it's definitely kosher for Passover and certified as such by a rabbi in the ultra-Orthodox area of Monsey, New York, and it is available from rvbbrewery.com. What's next? Kosher for Pesach challah? In any case, to continue our playing of Passover music, here's the Passover psalm, When Israel Came Out of Egypt, as sung by the Western Winds, to a composition by Louis Lewandowski.
Betzis Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, bis Yarkov le'arnos, hoy sol Yehuda le'kashav, Yisrael ma'akshilosov, hayom ra'ov ayalos, hayarden Yisrael le'achor, eholim ra'kruche elim, Malecho hayom kisolus, hayotem kisol le'acha, le'ohim kirgluvim, kevos kivnetzom, milifne adon voli arets,
That was the Western Winds singing B'tzeit Yisrael B'mitzrayim, our exodus from Egypt, in a psalm that's chanted every day of the festival of Passover. You know, it's time for another rite of spring, the start of the baseball season at opening day. To get us fully ready, here's Mandy Patinkin's version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game in Yiddish. And so we say for the coming baseball season, Spiel Ball! We are delighted to welcome our visiting correspondent from Israel, Rabbi David Wilfon. Gingy, good morning, Gingy.
Good morning, Sam. Although you're saying good morning, I have to confess, here in Jerusalem, it's 10 o'clock at night.
You know, it's that time zone difference. You have pioneered this really wonderful event, the Ride for Reform Judaism. Can you explain the purpose of it, the necessity of it, and then what it entails?
The Ride for Reform is in its seventh year. It is a tzedakah or charity bike ride to raise money to help reform synagogues and kindergartens and communities in Israel. But it's really about creating social connections between Jews in America and Europe and Israel to spend 5 days living together, davening together, riding together, and talking together. So people who might otherwise be reading about each other in the newspaper get like this intensive period of being with one another and talking about the issues that confront our communities and how we can help each other.
So who rides and how do you end up raising money for Reform Judaism?
Who rides? Basically, people who love bike riding. So if you have any bike riders out there who would love to have an incredible experience biking through Israel, anybody can ride. We also have a group from HUC, the Hebrew Union College, the seminary where I teach. We had 11 students who participated. There's also in the Reform movement in Israel something called the Michina, which is this program for students just before they go into the army. They delay their army service for a year in order to do community or national service. They live in the city called Jaffa, and they do all sorts of programs and soup kitchens and literacy programs, and they participate as well. And then members of Israeli Reform congregations and then members of American Reform congregations and European Reform congregations, those are the participants. And just to say a word about the path, this year we rode from Matula, which is way up in the north, the very north of the country, and we rode to the ending point of 5 days. The ending point is Zichron Yaakov, which is sort of the capital of Israel's wine country. So we kind of finished with a wonderful wine tasting.
Boy, biking and wine tasting, what could be a better combination? Well, of course, unless you have to bike back after. Why is it so important to raise money for the Reform movement in Israel?
The Reform movement in Israel doesn't receive support from the government. There's an interesting situation in Israel where the Orthodox congregations, their electric bill, the salary for the rabbi, the building fund, the building of the buildings is all funded by the government. But there's kind of prejudice. If you belong to the Orthodox, everything is paid for out of the taxes, but the Reform doesn't receive that benefit. And so we're sort of at a disadvantage, and Israeli salaries are about 75% less than an American salary. So our congregants can give a little bit of money to pay for things, but the expenses are high. So it's really helpful to have money raised to run kindergarten programs that parents who want their kids to have a liberal-style Jewish kindergarten experience, that's available to them, and not only Orthodox.
Where can people go to help out with the Ride for Reform Judaism, find out about going or helping to fund it?
Well, you can go to a website, www.riding, R-I-D-I-N-G, for the digit, the for Reform, and you can make a donation online. You can also look at the dates of the next ride, which I can announce here. It's going to be March, I believe it is the 6th to the 10th, 2011.
Thanks, Gingy. Wonderful experience. Chag Sameach, and we will talk next week.
Chag Sameach to you all, and I hope some of you might join us for the Ride for Reform.
Sounds great. When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, from Two Jewish Storyteller Jordan Hill, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We welcome the outstanding restaurateur, Janos Weiler of Janos Restaurant in the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, the best way to find out about the best restaurants, in Southern Arizona is to go to the website. It's www.janos.com. What's on there?
Well, that's what I want to direct people to this morning. On our website, we've got all of our wine dinners. We've got all of our specials. If you go to the website and opt in, we will send you an e-blast every week telling you all of the things that we're doing. We've got all sorts of wine dinners scheduled. We've got music coming up in the summer. We've got just fun menu things that change all the time. We'll let you know every week what's going on. Just go to the website, opt in, and you'll get an e-blast from us.
And cooking classes, too. My wife takes those.
The cooking classes, not to mention the cooking classes.
For really the best restaurant site in all of Arizona, www.janos.com. But people can also call you, can't they?
Just give us a call, 615-6100.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in Southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi. So we were talking about where are Jews still enslaved and where are Jews free, and the need to be constantly vigilant in the effort to free ourselves and free ourselves from various types of bondage. And I was reminded in a very stark sort of way on my recent trip during spring break. You know, I went to Australia and New Zealand. And in the middle of downtown Adelaide, which is the capital of South Australia and the center of an incredibly diverse wine-producing region, I saw a building that clearly used to be a synagogue, which is now a nightclub. And there's, unlike all the buildings around it, it's made of like dark gray or almost black cement or concrete. And part of the decoration on the exterior over the center doors is a huge Magen David, a Jewish star with 6 points. And you could see the sign that this once was a synagogue. And you have to wonder, you know, what brought Jews from wherever they came from, presumably Europe, England, Eastern Europe, the former Soviet Union, to Adelaide, Australia, of all places, which even for most Australians is fairly remote. And the speculation that I engaged in while I was there was that most of us are running from something for much of our lives, not necessarily to something. And the story of the Passover liberation from Egypt is, on the one hand, liberation from bondage and from slavery and the need to liberate ourselves and our fellow human beings in every generation from whatever form of slavery or bondage they might be suffering under. But on the other hand, the Passover story is about running to the promised land, a land where Jews could be in charge of their own destiny and a land which God had promised to their ancestors and to which he would continue throughout history to return the Jews to create what should be a just, ideal, humane society. And I found myself wondering if the Jews who arrived in this remote part of Australia were actually running to anything or simply from.
You know, I really think people are always running both from something and towards something. And we'll talk about this next week, Tom.
Looking forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service just for Pesach. A blind man is sitting on a park bench during the holiday of Passover. A rabbi sits down next to him and takes out his Pesachdik lunch and starts eating. Seeing the blind man has nothing to eat himself and taking pity on him, he takes a piece of matzah and gives it to the blind man. A few minutes later, the blind man turns, taps the rabbi on the shoulder and asks, "Who wrote this garbage?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature to Jewish just for you. You should live and be well, even during Passover. We now welcome our two Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Rabbi. So with Passover upon us, I wanted to tell these two different stories that are very small, but they're different takes on what was entailed in crossing the Sea of Reeds during the Exodus. It goes like this, the first one. They say that when the Jews came to the Red Sea, the Sea of Reeds, they were, you know, bound on one side by the Egyptians that were coming at them, especially once the pillar of smoke and fire had left, and on the other side by the sea. And God had commanded Moses to raise his staff and that the sea would part, but it didn't immediately. God needed to see that the Jews had faith in him. And so everyone looked nervously. The Egyptians were coming closer. The sea was staying put. But there was this one man. They say his name was Nachshon. And Nachshon, he trusted in God. He trusted in Moses. And so, not even waiting for the sea to part, he stepped into the water and he began to walk. And it was only then that someone had taken a step in the direction of faith, that the power was met and the sea opened up. Now, there is another different take on what it took to open the sea. And similarly, in this story, the Jews were sitting there pinned between the Egyptians, pinned between them and the Sea of Reeds. And again, God had said that the sea would open, but it wasn't open yet. But you know, in this story, all of the people had faith, and they had so much faith that they wanted to prove to each other how much faith they had and that they had more faith than the other one. And the men, especially, well, they started fighting with each other. One said, "I will be the first in the water," and he ran for the sea. But then another man grabbed him and threw him down and said, "No, but I will be the first." And all the men were fighting and wrestling. Meanwhile, the women were watching this ridiculous confusion, and they shook their heads knowingly, and they reached out their hands, and they joined hands. And together, not fighting each other, but together, they stepped into the Sea of Reeds. And it was not just their faith, but their togetherness in that faith that then caused the sea to open and brought the Jews their redemption.
Thanks, Jordan. We'll get another story next week. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion is third in the book of Leviticus, Shmini, and it includes a very dramatic and traumatic event. The tabernacle in the wilderness has just been consecrated, and the priests, Moses' brother Aaron and his sons, are entering into their office. God's presence fills the tabernacle, and all is good with the people. And then, suddenly, disaster strikes. Aaron's eldest sons, newly ordained priests named Nadav and Avihu, offer what is called Esh Sarah, a strange fire, before the Lord. They are immediately struck down and devoured by fire itself, dying before God. In the aftermath of this tragic shock, Moses consoles Aaron with strange words. God says, "By those brought near to me I am consecrated and honored before the people." There is no word on whether Aaron accepted this as somehow a just ending for his sons. The text merely says, "Vayidom Aharon," Aaron was silent. We do not know the young priest's offense, if there was any. We are not told what that strange fire was. God decrees, atonement offerings are made for whatever sin they may have committed, and the people are restored to God's favor. We also do not know why certain tragedies take place or why terrible things happen to good people. As Ben Sirach says in the text Ecclesiasticus, "We have been shown more than we can understand." We do know that Aaron's silence may be the only real response to profound tragedy and loss, and our comfort may come only when we silently acknowledge our own powerlessness. This may seem small comfort indeed, but it is also an honest appraisal of our ability to comprehend loss. May God preserve us from tragedy, but may God also give us the strength of Aaron when we have to face it, the ability to accept the painful inadequacy of our own explanations with dignity and courage. When we come back on Two Jewish in a few moments, we'll get the news of Jews around the world and talk with our guest, Sam Harris, perhaps the youngest person to survive the Holocaust concentration camps, who has a remarkable story to tell about his own experience creating the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center. Find out what that story is when we come back on Two Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Our brothers, our brothers.
In spite of the fact that the vast majority of Israelis consider themselves secular, about 50% of them will not eat bread or other leavened products on Passover. Of course, 100% of religious Jews observe the food requirements of the Pesach, but that 50% number is startling, especially when combined with the fact that 96% of secular Israelis celebrated some kind of Seder this year, and that of those, fully 63% say they did the entire Haggadah. Passover brings out the Jewish observance, even in the most officially chiloni, secular Israeli. The Obama administration held its second presidential Seder in the White House last week, continuing to build on a tradition that began on the campaign trail 2 years ago. In the old family dining room, under sparkling chandeliers and portraits of former first ladies, the mostly Jewish and African-American guests recited prayers, retold the biblical story of slavery and liberation, ending with the traditional declaration, "Next year in Jerusalem." Never mind the current chill in the Obama administration's relationship with Israel, which might modify that phrase to "next year in Jerusalem, so long as no more housing gets built there." Well, anyway, Chag Sameach v'Kasher, Mr. President. And in Israel, the famous St. Peter's fish, a favorite dish for tourists for many years, has now been placed off limits and off the menu for those who are visiting the Sea of Galilee. In recent years, there's been a dramatic drop in the fish population, from 330 tons caught annually down in the last 5 years to a shocking 9 tons. That means that the fishery is declining to unsupportable limits. In an attempt to preserve this very ancient fish and this ancient fishing practice, it shows up in the Tanakh, and many New Testament stories are set on the shores of the Kinneret with Jesus' followers, including fishermen like, well, you know, Peter. The ban comes into effect this month, essentially ending, at least temporarily, this famous fishery. May the fish return to the Sea of Galilee speedily and soon. And the conservative movement is getting close to officially opening its very first synagogue building in Melbourne, Australia. While the majority of Australia's 100,000 Jews consider themselves Orthodox, or at least nominally so, the rest belong to or consider themselves Reformed Jews. And the conservative movement has never really gotten a foothold on the Australian continent. Now it seems that the movement, which has its largest concentration of affiliated Jews in North America, is finally beginning to make inroads down under. Half of Australia's Jews reside in Melbourne, and the 600-member congregation represents the first established entity of that size or scope on the Australian scene. They're expecting to dedicate their new building in time for Rosh Hashanah. And that's the news of Jews round the world. We welcome back our guest on Two Jewish This Morning, Sam Harris. He is a Holocaust survivor, one of the very youngest to have lived in the camps. We'll talk about that experience a bit. He was 3.5 years in 2 concentration camps and was liberated at the age of 9.5. Author of a book, Sammy, Child Survivor of the Holocaust, and the president of the Illinois, let's see if I get it right, I probably won't, Holocaust Museum and Education Center in Skokie, the newest and maybe most important new Jewish institution in all of the last year or two. Welcome back, Mr. Harris.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about your own experiences. You were a little boy when the Nazis came in 1939. You were 4 years old.
I was 4 years old, and I lived in a little shtetl, Dęblin, Poland, which is a little south of Warsaw. And interestingly enough, Rabbi, my father was a soifer writing the Torah, and his father was a rabbi.
So you really come from Yichus.
Oh, Yichus and Jewish blood and songs. I drive my wife crazy driving here, listening to all the Jewish songs. I mean, from way back, Yiddish Mama and all of that good stuff. So that's my background, and I remember being a cheder as a little boy. And I remember this far back, when I was about 3.5 years old, my father was sitting at the table with me, and there was a rabbi standing over me, and he dropped candy over my head. I guess they were trying to teach
me that learning is sweet. I didn't realize it till many years later, and I still remember that wonderful, sweet moment.
We still do that from time
to
time.
Do you really? Wonderful.
Well, you know, I have jelly beans here. It's not quite the same, but
we didn't have them.
A drop of honey on the page when you were studying Talmud.
Oh, good, good.
So, you know, you had a large family. I know.
We had a large family. I'm the youngest of seven, and I only have two sisters, and I survived. They're older. The older sister is living in Vienna. She's about 90. She's the one that actually saved me. She sacrificed and made sure that I lived. Without her, I would be dead. She was hiding me, sharing her food. She did whatever she could and so on. So she's the one that gets credit for my life, and I think about her every day and talk to her.
Extraordinary. You know, most of the survivors were in their teens, in their 20s. They were young enough, but young enough to work and to survive the horrible experience of the camps. You know, for a four-year-old to have made it for 3.5 years, you know, is really exceptional. Was it just because of your sister? What did you end up doing in the camps? Were you hidden the whole time?
Well, I had to hide in the barracks under the bunks.
Under the wooden bunks.
Yes. I'd like to share a religious experience with you, if I may.
I'm a rabbi. I appreciate those.
Yeah, this one is really, I think about this all the time. I was in a cattle car on the way from them. It's toward the end of the war. I was in the cattle car going from Demblin concentration camp to Częstochowa concentration camp. The Russians came too close, so they threw us in cattle cars and they took us over there. Well, there were five kids in the cattle cars, and I was one of them. And they could see us coming off, and so the Nazi pulled me away. And, of course, I didn't want to go, so he kicked me in the chest, and I still remember his shiny boot, and my sister was crying, but I was too small, so I was with four other kids. We were ready to be killed, like they had done with all the other children that were there a week before. Well, it's a long story, so I won't tell you. We were very lucky, and the SS guy agreed to let us live, providing he never... I'd be happy to tell you the story if we have time, why he did. But the part that I wanted to tell you is that once he decided to let us live... We went in, and I could see all the Jews waiting and seeing these five little kids coming, and the Jews were crying, and they hadn't seen children, and suddenly the gate opened, the barbed wire, and I was handed in, and the Jews lifted me up. They passed me and kissed me from hand to hand. They were crying, and they protected me. And this is a memory. It was like Torah being passed on Simcha's Torah.
Sure.
It is something that has propelled me all these years to remember the 1.5 million children that didn't make it.
Tell us about reinventing this Holocaust museum and education center. As you said, there was an institution that existed.
Yes, it was a small 6,000 square foot deal, and I was in New York, and I saw the other museums all around, and I thought that Chicagoland should have something more visible. So I was on the board of directors of the Holocaust Foundation, and I'd never been in the army, so I volunteered to be the chairman. And of course, there was...
You hadn't found out what happens when you volunteer.
Well, I tell you, there was a rush. It was a unanimous vote.
Yeah, nobody, everybody else left, and you were the chair.
I became chairman, but there was a rush of blood going through me, unlike anything I've ever... Because I said, we will have a museum. I knew nothing about museums. I knew nothing about anything, but I had that rush. And that wonderful thing happened. I started talking about it and all the time. And every time I talked to somebody, they wanted to be part of it. I've never experienced anything like that. So and anyone who talked like they were interested, they became part of the board. So pretty soon we had a nice board and people who volunteered. And I'm a Rotarian, by the way. I understand you are, Rory.
I am. That's true.
And I remember the next... I volunteered on a Monday night. On Tuesday, we have a Rotary meeting. I'm sitting around a round table with about eight other Rotarians. None of them were Jewish, by the way. And I told them what I volunteered to do. And the lady
who's the head of Chamber of Commerce, Barbara Hayscar, she says, I want to help you. Next to her was a senator. Suddenly, I had a group of Rotarians wanting to help me. And from there, it went on. They introduced me to the right people. And it was a moment whose time had come, because it was right about then when you get guys like the president of Iran saying the Holocaust never happened. You get guys like the guy from Northwestern, Butts. He wrote the book, The Hoax of the 20th Century. That didn't happen. And so the timing was right. And I got to tell you this, Rabbi. I went through grade school, high school, college, the business world. I never talked about the Holocaust. I wanted to go on with life. But when all of these things were happening...
You started to tell your story.
Well, a rabbi, Willy Frankel, a Rotarian, got me to talk. He's a Viennese Jew, and we used to meet and talk in Yiddish. He said, Sam, with this guy Butts at Northwestern, you got to talk. So being an inventive rabbi, I says, okay, I will talk, but you can interview me on the video. The videos came out first time, and nobody sure. in the room, so he did. And then he had a meeting with 250 people.
And he showed the video.
Yeah, 250 people at yes. the temple while I was in the audience. That was the first time I spoke. Wow. So Rotary had a big part in this.
That's great. In putting together the museum, you had Stanley Tigerman, who's a very well-known architect.
Yes.
Michael Barenbaum, famous Holocaust.
Yes.
Educator and designer, Yitzhak Meiss, David Lehman. A very interesting group of people.
Yes.
How did you attract them? What was the approach?
The Rotarian lady, Chamber of Commerce, she says...
It all comes from the Rotary Club.
Hey, I'll have to come to your Rotary Club.
You will?
She says, I know an architect who will build a museum. So I went to him and I said, it isn't fair. We just have one choice. He said, I don't know any other architects. So I made him chairman, and he looked around for others, and he found, and then we interviewed him, and that's how we got Stanley Tigerman. He had some Talmudic studies, and he made a presentation, made us all cry. He was terrific. So that's how we got him. What was your next question?
Well, Michael Barenbaum.
Oh, Michael Barenbaum. Well, my good friend, remember I mentioned I went to New York? I have this Ernie Michel, a Holocaust survivor. He's the one that organized the 1981... a reunion in Jerusalem.
Right.
When he was in Auschwitz, he swore that if he ever... He became my very, very close friend. And he said, Sam, here's a name, Itzik Mays. And he's the one that came up with those names. Mm-hmm. And we contacted them. And they are fabulous. They're the best in the business.
The Holocaust Museum, what's the website? Because I know people will want to go see it.
Illinois Holocaust Museum. org.
I want to thank Sam Harris for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Thank you for the great work that you do and continuing to do so, and hope to talk again.
Thank you so much for having me here, Rabbi.
Our pleasure. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Mimuna is the most unusual and fun Jewish event in Tucson. Great music, dance, delicious food, and fun in a fabulous, unusual way. Tuesday night, April 6th at 7 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel's, join in a fabulous Mimuna Moroccan Festival as we conclude Passover with great music and terrific treats from the Jewish tradition of Morocco. We'll sing traditional Moroccan melodies and dance up a storm as we end the Festival of Matzah with lots of non-Passover treats. Join Rabbi Sam Cohen and classical guitarist Steve Shulman for a spectacular program of exciting Sephardic music and performance, all accompanied by a marvelous meal of delicious and unique Mimuna sweets and treats. It's a great night of wonderful music, food, drink, and supple dancing, co-sponsored by the Israel Center and Temple Emmanuel. Tickets for the Mimuna Festival are just $10 in advance for Temple and JCC members, $12 for general admission, and $15 at the door. Students with an ID card are just $5, and all children under the age of 13 attend free. All food and drink is included. Call 327-4501 to get your tickets now for the Mimuna Festival and Concert, Thursday, April 6th at 7 p.m. with the Israel Center at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Marcia Levick of the Juvenile Law Center, which protects the rights of children from crooked judges. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from our store of great Passover music. It's a final Chag Gadol, the song at the end of the Passover Seder that's a sort of House the Jack Built Jewish style, as sung by the Western Winds. My friends, have a Chag Pesach Sameach V'Kasher, a good, healthy, sweet, and kosher Passover, and a Shavua Tov, a week, we pray, of peace.
Chag
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.